Last week, Georgia State Board of Education approved a resolution that seeks to stop teaching what some members call divisive ideologies in public schools. Now, that's a pretty wide net, but it's not hard to figure out what they're talking about with some context. Most of last week's meeting was a debate of critical race theory, an ideology that looks to American history through a lens of race and how those racial inequities and racism itself played a part in developing the society we now live in today. Laws, policy, everything, the whole shebang. And while the resolution that passed during the meeting doesn't explicitly mention critical race theory, it's the only ideology that was discussed during the hour-long meeting. And following the meeting, Governor Kemp released a statement applauding the school board's opposition to teaching CRT in Georgia's K-12 classrooms. Today I'm joined by John Nwosu, a current counselor and diversity training expert, who is going to tell us exactly what CRT is and what it isn't. The commute is presented by National Office Systems. Welcome to The Commute this Tuesday, June the 8th of 2021. I am Will Peebles, and I'm filling in for host Adam Van Bremer, who is taking some time off. He deserves it. He's been hard at work lately. As you heard in the intro, we're going to be attempting to broach a fairly difficult subject to talk about today, and that is critical race theory. It's a hot-button issue right now that Governor Brian Kemp began to loudly proclaim opposition to last week, the week of the state Republican convention on Jekyll Island, where he was greeted with boos by a crowd whose favor has dwindled since his refusal to overturn Georgia's election results back in November. But Kemp's not the only one talking about it. CRT was a point that came up in last week's Chatham County School Board meeting as well. Lieutenant Governor candidate Jamie Seaver spoke out against the issue with a group of local conservatives there, and Barbara Augsdorfer has that story. Now, in Barbara's story, the school board's response is that it aligns its curriculum to Georgia State standards and has, quote, no plan or movement to incorporate critical race theory into our K-12 curriculum. There really wasn't any talk about it until Kemp started talking about it, but now that it's out there, let's learn about it, because Georgia, along with Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida, and eight other states, either have or are considering banning the teaching of CRT and its tenets in public schools. But like I said, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's start at the very basics. But first, I need to plug The Commute's presenting sponsor. You guessed it, it's National Office Systems. Their name says it all. They are the source for office design and outfitting services in Savannah. We at The Morning News are proud to call ourselves clients, as are hundreds of other businesses in the Savannah area. I tell you what, I've sat in these chairs, and they're great chairs. National Office Systems has been serving this community for more than 30 years, that's a long time, and works with the best suppliers in the business, from Savannah's own Dirt Modular Interiors, that's D-I-R-T-T, which manufactures configurable office environments, to Office Furniture Superpower Herman Miller. Woo! Let me tell you, y'all, get you a Herman Miller, save your back some pain. Learn more by visiting natoffsys, that's natoffsys.com. And here is the interview with John Wilson. So I'm joined today by John Nwosu, a current higher education counselor who I met personally while at Georgia Southern. John led my college newspaper's diversity training sessions, and he knows far more than I do about a difficult topic that we have on hand here. So, John, thank you so much for coming on and lending your expertise. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Sure, for sure. So kind of just to jump right into it, just a top-down view, what is critical race theory? What does it entail?
Sure. So we know that race matters. And one of our common approaches that I hear all the time when we talk about race is people citing Martin Luther King, who talks about everyone being judged by the character, not by the color of their skin. And really, that represents color blindness. At least that's how people have taken it. And so critical race theory just is kind of the opposite of that. It says not that we want to judge people based on the color of their skin, but people actually are judged based on the color of their skin far too often. And we have to be race conscious in order to create something that is more akin to the constitutional values that we talked about in terms of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it also talks about race and racism as playing a central role to the way that our society is operated, because we know that at the time that the forefathers of this country were writing those words, most people were not excluded. If you were a woman, if you weren't a property owner, if you were not white, if you were not, you know, of the wealthy elite class if you weren't Christian, right? There are so many people that weren't included in that. But we also know that a lot of the four founders also owned enslaved, you know, people at that point in time too. And then there was a whole genocide of Native Americans. So like a lot of, for a lot of time throughout our society's existence, we've been good at saying one thing and having really, really high ideals, but in action, we do a different thing way too often. And critical race theory helps us give the right lens to be able to look at that through the right analysis so that we can make better decisions that will ultimately lead us towards somewhere where everyone does have access to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, regardless of how they show up in the world. So I hope that made sense.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, I think it's a difficult topic for a lot. I think a lot of people to come into, especially a lot of white people, because it's hard for them to. What we've always been taught is this very patriotic view of America, as you said earlier, kind of a colorblind look at history in a way. And I wanted to touch on colorblindness a little bit, because I often hear that as kind of a, well, I'm colorblind. I don't see color. I don't take race into account. And a lot of the opposition that we're hearing to this kind of plays into that same mindset. So why is colorblindness a bad thing?
Well, if you don't acknowledge that race exists in it, and that we have differences that are based in race, and that we are treated differently because of our race, then there's no way for you to acknowledge all of the problems that come along with our society. And so, you know, we got to be able to at least have the conversation to say that, yes, even though I'm Black, you're white, or, you know, whatever other racial groups exist, we have to be able to say that, yes, we do think that everyone should be treated fairly. And unfortunately, that's not always the case. So how do we remedy that? And you can't even start that conversation unless you acknowledge that there are racial differences to begin with.
That there has to be a base level of understanding that a person born into a Black family in America will have a different U.S. American experience than a person born into a white family, like just fundamentally so, just because of be that generational wealth or a number of other factors. But why is that difficult for people to hear sometimes? Why is that hard to really wrap their heads around?
I think that for a lot of folks, depending on how you're brought up, you got that same message of America's great and it's only great. And to some extent, various forms of propaganda, really. It's not necessarily about truth sometimes. Sometimes it's just about making your team look good, you know? Sure. And so there's like this connection where people are connecting their identity with the perception, and it makes it difficult to have the conversation. And also, if you've been told the same thing for so long, it's kind of difficult to unlearn that. So there's resistance to it as well, because not only do you have to learn something new, and you have to work really hard to unlearn what you already learned, for a lot of folks, I think because of how we frame the conversation, it's a conversation about your identity, about whether or not you're a good person. And that also makes it difficult to really talk about what people are doing and how those actions are impacting, because we get stuck on the intention. We get stuck on the America is good, period. Our country doesn't have those kind of problems here, or my state or my community doesn't have those kind of problems here, because we're a good community. And in reality, you can have really good intentions and you can do a lot of really great things and still do things that are harmful to Black, Indigenous people of color and other marginalized groups.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So speaking of history and how it is taught, you talked a little bit about that. What I remember from grade school is, I guess, a patriotic view of American history. It's like, you know, we had like this whole chapter on Manifest Destiny and how we're expanding to the West, and, you know, all like during that whole time when, and then later on in my life, you know, my college history classes, it's a little bit more in depth, and it starts to talk about the Trail of Tears and the genocide of Native Americans. And, you know, like that is, I think what, is that the goal of critical race theory, to look at it from that perspective? And how does that change the historical curriculum when you're looking at it through the lens of race?
I think for me, critical, based on my understanding of my research, when you talk about the people who are really instrumental in creating critical race theory, like Kimberly Crenshaw and Derek mm-hmm. Bell, their goal wasn't to push a particular agenda as much as it was to really help give us the right lens to which to see the truth. Right. And so it's more to me, it's like going to optometrists where they, you know, ask you what, and I know you have the glasses struggle. I've had it since like second grade. Oh, yeah. But yeah, they say one or two, you go every year, they try to make sure that your prescription is upgraded, you know, and that's the type of attention that we want to bring to these conversations. They need to be critical so that we can look with the right lens to see the right way. And in the same way that you go to an ophthalmologist or an optometrist, we need to make sure that we're visiting experts to have this conversation, because you're not going to see the same thing with a microscope that you would a telescope, that you would whatever you call that instrument at the optometrist's office. You know what I mean? And so it's important for us to really understand that all it is analysis, right? It helps us break down what it is that we're seeing and being able to tell the truth and see the truth for what it really is. And I think the other piece that we have to acknowledge is historically, like everything has been used as a tool to maintain power and power dynamics. And we have to understand that race and racism have also been used in the same way. And the reality is that historically you've had groups of people like the Daughters of the Confederacy who have been instrumental in education and making sure that a certain retelling of the story was implanted in our history books. And that, I mean, everyone's been taught that, right? Everyone's primarily been taught that version of history where America looks like it can do no wrong and it has done no wrong. The Manifest Destiny, you hear all about how, you know, there's settler colonialism, but we don't talk as much about how there are tribes and ethnic groups who no longer exist because of the way that we expanded and whose, you know, bloodlines and lineages and histories are completely wiped away. And we're still seeing the legacy of those things to this day. So I think it's important for us to have a truthful conversation and put all of the historical puzzle pieces together so we can get a real picture and see that picture through the appropriate lens.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense the way you explained it that way, because it's looking at things critically. Like it's in the title, you know, like it's right there. It's critical race theory. Big thanks again to John for coming on. Really do appreciate that and that expertise. And that's a tough conversation to get into, but very much worth it. I strongly recommend talking more about race and hearing from other people of different perspectives. Speaking of which, would you like to hear different perspectives from around the Savannah area and even beyond? Well, have I got a deal for you. Right now, you can get 6 months of access to SavannahNow.com, premium access to SavannahNow.com, our online publication, for just $6. Now, I don't do math. I leave that to the experts, but I think I can get this one on my own. 6 months, $6, $1 every month. Take that, failing math scores in high school. Now, I recognize that there are plenty of places you can get your news in 2021. There's tons of national outlets that cover all kinds of stuff, but I can say with thorough confidence that there's no one doing the work that we are doing. Local news is a vital part of understanding the place that you live and the people who live there. And honestly, I mean this, I'm not even speaking in hyperbole because they're writing my checks. Savannah Morning News does that, and you would not have that experience without the subscription. And right now it's $1 a month for 6 months. Sure, it goes up after that, but just you can cancel it if you don't like it, you know, like get in there, give it a shot and see what it feels like to be actually really in tune with what's going on in your community. Myself and the other reporters here are deeply committed to local journalism and honestly, just pleading, please help us keep the lights on here. It's so vitally important that we do that. Again, that's $1 a month for 6 months at SavannahNow.com/subscribe. Now. So kind of to get into the legislative part of it, last week, the school board's resolution from June 3rd essentially puts a stop to concepts that, quote, impute fault, blame, a tendency to oppress others, or the need to feel guilt or anguish to persons solely because of their race or sex. In your eyes, is that the point? Like, is that the point to make white people feel guilty about the things that their ancestors did? Is that like the goal of critical race theory? Because from reading the bills, you would expect that is like front and center, like before every class, they're like, all white students, please stand and apologize to those of color in the class, you know?
Yeah. So that is the secret underlying goal that we try not to tell people about until they've already agreed to everything. Like, it's the fine print. But in all seriousness, no, I don't want to call it an unfortunate byproduct. It just is a byproduct of having those conversations, right? If you bumped into me and I point out the fact that you bumped into me and you feel guilty as a result of that, right? There are different things that you can do to remedy that guilt, right? You can get mad at me for bringing up the fact that you bumped into me, or you can acknowledge that you made a mistake, even if you didn't mean to, right? And then you can work to restore whatever relationship is in place. And there are lots of different ways that we can respond to this. But I think part of the issue is that, as Brene Brown would say, shame is afoot. And I don't know if she's ever said shame is afoot, but she talks about shame a lot, right? And she defines shame as feeling unworthy, being afraid that you are unworthy of love and belonging. And when we have these conversations, there's a difference between shame and guilt. And guilt is I did something bad. Shame is I am bad, right? And when we have these conversations, again, it's so attached to identity that a lot of times people are experiencing shame. And in rejection of that shame, they're trying to shut down the entire conversation. And even those who are feeling guilt, I did something bad. Well, you may have been, as a white person, you may have benefited from the social advantages that come along with this racial inequality, the systemic racial inequality, right? But in terms of you doing something bad, I think that, again, that's a conversation worth breaking down. Because, like, what do you feel like you did bad? You know, if you did indeed do something bad, what approach are you going to take to restore whatever harm was caused to significant relationships in your life? I think that's where the nature of this conversation could go. And it's so far away from that, just because this is a really hard topic that people don't know how to discuss. And they always, I think that it has been misused and abused, the topic itself, to maintain different separations. And I think that we just aren't prepared to have a conversation. And it's a boogeyman. It's a huge boogeyman. And I would say there are some people who have a vested interest in ensuring that we don't have these conversations, right? Because when you look at, like, lower socioeconomic status, folks who are lower wage earners, folks like who are essential workers during the pandemic, a lot of those people are disproportionately Black and brown, but there are poorer white folks who are in those demographics as well. And from a class perspective, there are a lot of people who have very similar needs that are not being addressed and are divided based on race, but they have more in common with folks who share that socioeconomic status. And if I'm someone who's making a lot of money and I don't want to give more of my money to the people who helped earn that money, I would rather talk about culture issues. I would rather talk about how CRT shouldn't be in schools, even though it's not really in schools, right? I would rather talk about anything that will allow me to not discuss how housing prices are ridiculous, rental prices are ridiculous. The amount of money that we're spending per pupil on education in Georgia is ranked like 35th in the nation. We're not investing in our education. I would rather talk about anything that's going to allow me to keep my money, if I'm being selfish and greedy, than things that will allow everyone to essentially benefit and just pretending as though this conversation is dangerous for everybody, when really it's dangerous for me in my pockets.
So, yeah, I guess one other thing that I wanted to touch on, because even though my interactions with you at Georgia Southern weren't extremely broad, like, we didn't have a lot of conversations, the ones that we did have really stuck with me. And I wondered, for a lot of folks who are coming into this conversation, and like you said, it's a pretty difficult topic to talk about race in any capacity for a lot of various reasons, which you've just explained as well. What advice would you give them for maybe exploring this idea that history isn't necessarily what they've taught? Or is there any literature you'd recommend? Anything that, what is something that people can do if they're interested in this topic and they're not just looking to take the face value from politician A or politician B, you know?
Yeah, I think that there are a few books that have been really helpful for me. First of all, let me say there's no, like, playbook, right? There's no step one, step two, step three type situation. And I think we have to kind of go into it understanding that there's going to be some type of work that you're going to have to do. Like, you're going to have to change your habits in some way to really make time to learn more about it. And maybe it's 30 minutes a day. Maybe it's, you know, it's an hour a week or something like that. But there isn't, like, this is such a complex topic that you can't just you know, put it in your social media feed and randomly see about it every day, or just like post a black square in support of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Like, you know, it's gonna take more than that. So I would say that when we talk about social inequality, a lot of times we don't make the connection to economic and political inequality. So some books that kind of make a lot of sense to me, I would say The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. I would say The Color of Law. I can't remember the guy's name, but that is a good place to start. And Being Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. And then Anand Giridharadas has a book. I can't remember the name of his book. Hold on one second. But it really, really hits on all of the different. It's called Winners Take All. So it hits on all of the different ways that there are elites, academic elites and economic elites on the left and the right, who kind of are using the political system to do their bidding. And they use a lot of things like philanthropy to kind of launder their image and make things look cleaner, when a lot of the problems that we're facing are because of economic greed, right? And an ineffective distribution of wealth and income. And I think all of those factors together will really help give a picture that will allow folks to better understand what is going on. Because we're all getting played more or less. And I think that if you are Black, Indigenous, or a person of color, those unique challenges that you face are definitely going to make an impact on your life. But a lot of folks who are also middle class and in working class white folks, they're going through issues. They have challenges as well. And we have to be able to have a conversation that frames everything appropriately so that we can meet the needs of all marginalized groups while also ensuring that everyone has access to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Gotcha. Well, hey, thanks, John, so much. I appreciate you coming on, man. And is there anywhere you're on social media? Do you'd like people to find you and follow you or anything like that?
If yeah, not, you that's can cool. look me we up. Up. Yeah, yeah. John J. New, JohnJayKnew on Twitter and Instagram. And then my business name is Think Diff, ThinkDiffLife. Think Diff Life is what I am on Instagram and Twitter. But the name of my company is Think Diff, and we help develop the skills and wills for essential change. So I definitely appreciate the opportunity. I'm glad we got to have this conversation. And don't hesitate to hit me up if you need anything else in the future.
For sure, man. Hey, thanks so much. And you have a good afternoon, all right?
You too.
And hey, that is it. That's all. That's this episode of The Commute. One more big thank you to presenting sponsor National Office Systems. Get you some modular office supplies. Get you some chairs, natoffsys.com. And if you enjoyed this episode and you want to hear more, download archived episodes on your podcast app by searching for The Commute with @SavannahOpinion. I appreciate y'all bearing with me. This is my first time doing the podcast, so hopefully I wasn't too disruptive to your normal commute flow. But Adam will be back soon. And until then, I'm Will Peebles. I appreciate you stopping by. Have a good afternoon.